Successful. Welcome. Okay, should we go ahead and get started? Becky, would you mind pulling up the agenda, please?
Was Dean able to join?
Yes. So we are recording and live streaming this meeting, just to make you aware of that. We really only have one item as a matter of voting or business, and that would be to approve our minutes of the last meeting. And the rest of our meeting will be informational. So with that, does anyone have any comments or changes for the minutes from the last meeting? Okay, if there are no comments to it, does anyone want to make a motion to approve the minutes from the February 6, 2020 meeting?
Terry, this is Jim Evans. I move for approval.
Okay. I'll second. It's Andrew Gruber.
Okay, all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Okay, I think we'll call that approval of the minutes of the last meeting. Oops, let me see. One more step. Oh, somebody let him in. Okay.
I got it.
All right, so our next item on the agenda is the statewide travel changes due to the pandemic. And Carolyn Gannat is going to present on behalf of UTA, and then I'm going to present some of our numbers on traffic, but I'm going to let Carolyn go first because I think she's got something else she needs to get to. So Carolyn, let me see if I can, let me first share my screen.
Thank you.
Give me 1 second. Okay, can everyone see that? Can anyone see that?
Yeah, we can see it now. Yeah. I can see it.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Awesome. Just let me know when you want me to click, Carolyn.
Okay, so I'm Carolyn Gannat, Executive Director of Utah Transit Authority. So I'm not sure if I've met all of you yet, but just want to talk a little bit about what's been going on since the pandemic started in terms of our service, and then some of the efforts we're doing right now in terms of developing recovery guidelines. So we could go to the next slide. And I will, I'm actually looking on my screen. So for the fixed bus route, we did some service modifications on April 5th. We really saw ridership really take a nosedive, and I'll show that to you in a moment. Right as pretty much the day that Rudy Gobert announced that they announced he had COVID-19, and that day we started to see huge decreases every day. So we did some service modifications on April 5th. We did maintain service on most of the routes, the span of service, to be able to serve the essential trips. This is important. A lot of essential trips are not a normal commute period. We did adjust the frequency of the service on most of the bus routes that were 15 and 30. Most of them we did if they were 30, we went to 15, but some of them we did keep at 15. We did adjust the UVX service, which is down on Utah County, our BRT, to 15 minute service from 6 minutes. That service has been really impacted. You'll see that in a moment with the schools out. And then we did end up adding more trips to 33, 35, 200, and 217, those routes, to enable social distancing. Those were really what we saw was our workhorses during this time frame, and still are heavily wrought services that still carry a lot of riders. We did suspend some of the commuter bus routes where alternative service was available that we provide, particularly from the north and from the south. Our light rail, we adjusted the frequency from 15 minutes to 30 minutes, and on commuter rail, we adjusted the frequency from 30 to 60 minutes of service, Monday through Saturday. We don't run on Sundays. most of these changes are still in effect today. We haven't made any changes, even though we have moved from a high risk state to a moderate risk, and then in other areas, a low risk state. So talk a little bit about the effects on our ridership to date, and we can go to the next slide. And this is primarily, we monitored what we did on weekdays and the weekends as well. So we can go down to the next slide, Terry, thank you. On the weekday ridership, we are carrying about 42,000 people. This was about a month after the service modification. So this was actually towards the end of April. That was our average weekday ridership. You can see it stayed relatively flat. The announcement to take action was really Wednesday, March 11th. I think that was the same day that they announced that that this is a pandemic, the World Health Organization. We did see a big drop the day of the earthquake, not so much on the fixed bus route from normal, but with our light rail and our front runner, because we did have to change our service that day. Particularly light rail was out of service quite a bit due to a lot of outages on electrical outages in Salt Lake City. Then we continue to see a decrease. April change day, we did see a jump down, another jump down. And it shows right there towards the end of April, we were carrying 70% of our fixed bus ridership. We were down 70%, down 75% on light rail. UVX is down 83%, front runner 86%, and paratransit 87%. We are seeing since beginning of May, and then particularly as we went to sort of moderate risk, we are seeing increases in that now. We don't have those numbers on this chart. We're just starting to pull those together, but we are starting to see that up. Fixed route bus ridership has gone up about 5% since then. Light rail up a little over 5% since then. We're still seeing front runners up a little bit, but they're the ones in the commuter market that we're not seeing come back as strong. And the paratransit is starting to uptick 5 to 10% more each day. Our Saturday ridership, we did see a loss, and that's on the next slide. And that is, we didn't see as big of losses in that. We actually saw continued service roughly 56% down on fixed bus. That is our biggest carrier as well as light rail. And we saw 65% decrease in light rail. We're seeing those tick up as well quite a bit with the sort of the loosening of some of the restrictions since these numbers have come about. But we did see Saturday still was impressive in the ridership considering how many restrictions were in place. And then on Sunday ridership, which is the next day, or next slide, we did see about a 50% decrease. And that's because not a lot of services have changed on Sunday. But we did see, huge precipitous drops the first Sunday. And then we will continue to see lowering. This area, this Sunday is actually, they're starting to rise again. And we're starting to see increases. The next slide just talks a little bit about some of the safety measures we've put into place. This is not something that we... I wouldn't say we weren't prepared. We have emergency operation plans for earthquakes and things like that. So March 18th, we were ready. We got out our book and we're rolling. There's not a problem there. But the safety measures for a pandemic were not something that were necessarily, most agencies did not have them. I would say probably almost all agencies in the country did not have it at the scale that we've had it. We have emergency plans for other things, but this was something that we were meeting day to day. The industry, tons of meetings with the industry. I probably was on phone calls with other general managers throughout the country, 2 to 3 times a week. We're all sharing a lot of information. We did develop a working group right away. This is really a partial activation of the our Emergency Operations Center. And they met daily until this week. They're now meeting 3 times a week. They monitor all the guidance, everything that's going on, review all the best practices. So it's held every morning at 8 o'clock. And so they just moved. They were 5 days a week. They've moved to 3 days a week. We are providing PPE to all our frontline employees. This was very difficult to get. We're not as high a priority as some of the first responders in the healthcare industry. So we really struggled. I don't think we got masks until sometime like second week of April. And we really just found a vendor who would who just made them out of cloth for us. And that was our first round. We are getting, then after that, we got sort of the disposable masks. Then we got KN95s, and we're supposed to be getting N95s in any time this week. But it's really struggled in trying to get PPE. We will be trying to provide a larger stock and supply ongoing from now on in case there are more flare-ups or things that we need to do in the future, even when this sort of calms down. We have had a lot of enhanced vehicle station facility cleaning, utilizing EPA-approved disinfectants. We really couldn't get certain disinfectants we typically used. We ended up going to a lot of bleach and water solutions for a while, which is really tough on some of our materials, including metals. We were daily disinfecting our floors. We now are using spray vacuum backpack sprayers with a disinfectant that has a microbial type of formula in it that lasts up to 48 hours. And we're using that currently on our light rail vehicles, our rail vehicles, and we're starting to use it on our buses. We're just waiting to get those spray packs in. And then we've discontinued handling of all of like sort of paper products and anything else as we went to a rear door boarding policy. And I think that's on the next page, some of the act on the next slide. We did have to really keep our operators safe as well as our passengers. We did rope off an area 6 feet behind from the operators or install yellow lines asking people to stay back. We did install temporary sneeze shields. We did have automatic opening of the tracks doors at stations so that you didn't have to press buttons or press any surfaces. Okay, and then just a quick couple pictures. When we wanted to go to the temporary sneeze shields, we could not order them. Everything was backed up. So we actually fabricated these in-house. We had a couple incidences along a couple of our lines, particularly one line that had a lot of COVID-19 on a homeless shelter where roughly 35% of the people in the center tested positive and they were still riding the bus. And people from the center were. So we actually quickly fabricated shields for our operators, put those on and put some protective measures in. And we also are ordering operator shields, which are on the next slide. And those are coming in. We have those on order from our bus manufacturer. And they'll be sending us the kits and we'll be installing them soon that they are just waiting to get the to put the kits together at the bus manufacturer. So going forward, we've moved this, which is on the next slide. We did put together, I have a recovery team that I appointed. There's 6 people on that, really focusing on not just our ridership and recovering that, but our financial stability. We are heavily funded. 2/3 of our funding is roughly 2/3 is from sales tax. And so we'll see a dip in the sales tax. Of course, we've seen a dip in our fares. And then there's been a lot of media and concerns about going on public transportation. And so a lot of it is also rebuilding community confidence in transit. We're implementing a strategy. It'll be out probably first tomorrow morning. We'll be putting out a summary of our guidelines where we have a UTA recovery plan guidelines. And we'll have a summary of that that'll go out tomorrow morning. We're mirroring the state's sort of recovery plan and some of the risk levels that the governor is saying, and try to target our service implementation in terms of how we bring back service based on social distancing practices, the risk levels that we're in, the reopenings, our financial stability. We will not come back the way we reduce service. We're going to have to be very flexible, very nimble, and do it within the confines of what we have in terms of financial ability. One of those major activities also trying to build customers' confidence in there. And that's why we're doing the customer survey right now, not just of our existing riders who are riding today, but also we have a large database in terms of our pass holders and being able to contact them about what their travel patterns will be, the behaviors, their concerns. So we can start taking a look at that. We will be putting a lot of cleaning practices that will continue going forward. And we're constantly working with the industry on anything that's coming up new and trying to implement that as well. We've been doing, particularly in terms of disinfectants. So those are sort of where we're going. Tomorrow we'll be putting out our guidelines that mirror sort of the high risk, moderate, low risk, and normal risk factors, and that will sort of just be summarized. We'll send that out. I'll get it definitely to UDOT and to all the partners here, but we could actually send it to the mailing list here on how we're planning on recovering service. We're going to be flexible so that if there's hot spots anywhere or a flare up, we'll have to be careful. We'll want social distancing on those bus routes or rail routes. So we may add more cars. We may add another bus in that area so that we actually have less riders, you know, less passengers on a bus should an area flare up. So we have to be flexible about that. We're also looking at how do we bring back the service, and it's going to be a very measured approach going forward. And this will probably be a 1 to 2 year effort. We're doing a lot of planning efforts as well to sort of mirror what we're doing going on long term. So I think I'm willing to take any questions. I think that's my last slide, if there are any. I know I ran through that really fast and I talked very quickly. Sorry.
Terry, I've got a question.
Certainly.
If I may.
I'm just trying to, I believe I've stopped sharing my screen. Okay, good. It wasn't showing up that way for me. Yes, Andrew, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. First of all, it's great to see everybody. Carolyn and the whole UTA team, I just want to just commend you for everything that you've done to navigate through this situation, to be able to keep service on the street and be able to provide mobility to people who rely on UTA. It's really been a remarkable effort, and for your staff who are putting themselves in some jeopardy by continuing to get out there every day, just thank you for that great effort that you're doing for our community. I guess the question I have gets to Carolyn, what you were talking about looking ahead to the future. We all know, not just in the short term, but for the long term, how essential it is that we have robust transit service that people feel comfortable riding, because we're going to return to growth in Utah. We will get back to focusing on traffic congestion and air quality and all of those issues. And for all the reasons that we've known and talk about all the time pre-COVID, we have to have a robust transit system. And I guess my question for you is on the funding and the revenues to be able to maintain service and maintain your staff and your operators so that you're prepared as you go forward. Will you give us a little more sense of the revenue picture that you're looking at now? Because you obviously got the money, or getting a significant chunk of money from the CARES Act. And then I know APTA has requested additional revenue. So just give us a little more inside sense of where your agency is at on the financial side.
Okay, so the CARES Act, I have to say, when we were in the middle of this, every day was changing. Every hour was changing for the first few weeks of this. I applaud the federal government for actually doing the CARES Act, because it did give money to the agencies. We're receiving $187 million in that first round. We're looking at a $300+ million operating budget for our agency a year. So we are looking at how far can we stretch that $187 million for the loss of revenues we're going to see in sales tax. We don't really know the extent of the loss of the sales tax. I do think Utah will come back faster. That will be useful. Right now, we have tried to preserve jobs. So really, when we did the service reductions, it was a means of keeping the operators still employed, taking them out of less exposure. So they're working 3 full days and 2 days they were on call, I would say, is how you would say it. And so that they could be reporting that day. And that's how we did that. So our savings were mostly in scheduled overtime and fuel in some areas. So we saw about, I think I'm starting to see numbers right around 3 million might be saving, which is not a whole lot, but it continues. Even when we build the schedule, we're still trying to preserve the jobs. The nice thing is our on the other front, we've also been keeping our mechanics and everything, but they're taking care of all the back log that we had on maintenance and preventive maintenance and sort of major overhauls, and they're starting to move on that. And it's been, I went out all last week to visit every unit and all the different shifts from early to graveyard to thank them for their service so far and keeping it clean, particularly those that are out there cleaning those buses constantly. Major disinfectants being used. I think as we go forward, I really think I have faith in the economy here that we will recover sooner. I think we're in much better shape than the East Coast and parts of the West Coast in terms of our ability to continue to provide service. I just think right now we're going to be looking at bringing back a very robust system. I do think we'll bringing back the rail as well. We'll be making changes in the rail system. For example, we're taking out all the fabric seats on light rail and replacing them with easy to maintain clean. I know the cleaning products will be there as we move forward, and they're getting better every day. And to really be able to take a look at just making people feel comfortable. And that's really going to be key. We're going to see where the telecommuting market goes. We're already seeing high tech. We're the first to allow telecommuting. They're going to be the last to probably come back. And you're already hearing some of them saying some of this will be permanent. Some of this will be through the end of the year. So we're going to continue to look at that because that's some of our front runner service that we have. But I think overall, it was amazing that we had a big reduction in trips, but we're already seeing an uptick. And we're really looking at what our workforces are. I think you're going to see a little bit changes in what we planned on doing. We're about to do service choices and do a brand new transit network. This has thrown sort of a monkey wrench into it. But we are clearly looking at everything in terms of how we bring it back and how do we make it as robust as possible. It's definitely it's a challenge, but it's a huge opportunity for us to work with everybody and with the partners that we have throughout the region to try to bring back the service in a measured way, but back to the robustness that you're talking about. And to tell you the truth, you're already seeing the congestion. I was driving down to our facility in Orem, and we sat in traffic to get there last week to meet one of the shifts. So it's not like traffic isn't back, and we know it's only going to get worse. So
I had a question, if I could.
Yes, go ahead, Myron.
You indicated that one of your challenges was to rebuild customer confidence. How are you measuring that? Are you just measuring that by ridership, or do you have some onboard surveys that show a metric for confidence?
So right now we have an onboard. We are looking at our riders right now, talking to our riders. Actually, we're talking to our operators who are out there as well, who are hearing things from our riders. But the other thing we're doing is that we have a lot of pass holders to our system. And so we're either, if we have access to them or through the company or the organization, we're going to be putting a survey out to them. Actually, I think it was going out today to the companies and the organizations to actually send out and get some feeling from them about whether they're taking transit now, if they aren't. And they were, you know, what is the considerations they're going to take in terms of coming back to take transit? And then the other question is those who never rode, what would it take them to ride transit? So we are doing that survey now.
Okay. Any other questions for Carolyn? Okay, well, I am going to take the screen again and talk a little bit about our numbers on some of our major routes. Let me, 1 second here. So I'm going to take you to our UDOT's website. And as soon as it scrolls to the next item here, if you click on the COVID-19, and we have tools and resources, we've put up a traffic volumes dashboard. And this is some information we prepared as we were going through the first stages of this. And then we were certainly getting requests from people to share the information. So we've now made this part of our website and probably will be for the next month or so. But this gives you a sense. This is comparing 2019 volumes to 2020 volumes. And you look at across the, it's averaging all of the facilities across the top. And you can see where we are May 18th. So So Monday, May 18th, and we were over across all of those 41,000 last year, where we're at 33,000 this year. So overall, across all those facilities, we're down about 12%. Now I can also click through on any individual facility. I can pick I-80 Summit County. And it was, there we go. I should have it now. Nope. And you can see that for I-80 Summit County, if you look at the number down in the bottom right, that facility is down 15%. So I can click across any of these. We'll say, for instance, I-15 Utah County, and another one that's down 15%. If I click on I-15 in Southern Utah, that one's down 10% from where it was last year at this time. Now it gets a little, so let me click Salt Lake County. So Salt Lake County down about 21%. Davis County about 20%. And then here's where things get a little bit more interesting. Traffic into Zion up 14%. Moab down about 60%. And then here's one where you start to see big jumps. Cottonwood Canyons, we have a lot of people out recreating, and if you've been out, you notice things being much more crowded. That one is up nearly 54%. So we've got a lot of numbers here. We also show these in a little bit, the way my screen is showing this, it's not letting me, let me see, there we go, okay. Now I can click onto some different ways of looking at the information, and I'm not going to click through every one of these, but you can go to this site and look at the numbers as you want to, but you can look at it by each day, you can look at it by facility, you can look at a specific location on a facility, but this is just another way we're tabulating the data. So whichever way it is that you want to look at it. So this is I-15 in Salt Lake County. And again, you can kind of see the trend where we started to drop down, and now we're starting to see things coming back up again. Here's another way to look at the data, with the black line showing the volumes we had in 2019 versus the color showing what we're experiencing in 2020. So a lot of information here. Here's I-15 in Utah County. Again, you can start to see that trend down percent of what we were in 2019. And then you can see that start to come back up again. And we're starting to get back to, in some areas, starting to get back to the levels that we were in 2019. So with that, I just want you to be aware of kind of where we're starting to see traffic, and let you be aware of where the tools are. And then with that, I'm glad to answer any questions that you guys might have. If there's something else you want me to click on or information you want me to go to, I'd be glad to do that. But with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions you have about what we're seeing in terms of traffic.
Hey, Terry, it's Carlton. One question I had is, does the last few months change your modeling at all? Carolyn mentioned, for example, we may see some change in the commuting population. Are you guys looking for anything like that? Or do you just plan on things sort of coming back to a prior level as well?
I'll maybe answer and then see if anyone else from UDOT wants to chime in on that. But I don't think that we're suggesting there's going to be a big change in how we look into the future. I think that, you know, part of our concern would be when people come back. Part of Carolyn's concern was, how do you make sure you attract them back to transit? We want to make sure people are attracted back to transit as well, because if they aren't, hopefully the next step would be that they're teleworking. But if they're not teleworking and they're not attracted back to transit, we're going to start to see a bigger volumes on our roadways. And that means we would potentially over time have to change what we're looking at, what we're forecasting. I think it might be a little early for us to know that, but I think we certainly want to help encourage transit ridership, and we certainly as a state and as an agency are looking very aggressively at telework and trying to encourage that. I think that's a, you know, we found how successful telework can be, and if we can get people to continue to telework, that certainly helps us save money on what we would potentially invest in our transportation systems.
Terry, I had a question. This is Beth Holbrook. I wanted to understand, and you might have it on your website already, but I couldn't see it from your slides. But do you have some of that data based on time of day travel, or is all of your data aggregate per day? I just wasn't sure about that. So maybe you could elaborate a little bit.
I believe we've got a lot of detail. It's a matter of what graphs we try to portray on our website, and we can get to that data, but I think what we've portrayed is more kind of what those daily patterns are, not so much the peak hours. And Carlos, I don't know if you recall in general what our data, whether we've been looking at data by peak hours.
Hello, Beth. We have been looking at the information by peak hour. We have volumes by hour on any facility, so we can slice it any which way. But we're trying to, as Terry said, summarize it and aggregate it. You know, really the reason we were being asked to look at this originally was to see if the if Utahns were following the governor's declaration to stay home. And so we were looking at the mobility data to see if we saw a relationship. And, you know, we absolutely did. And then the other piece is we're trying to get a good understanding, as what Caroline talked about, is the impacts to our revenue, and to try to better understand that. So that has more, right now, that's more of my attention than anything.
No, that makes sense, Carlos. Thank you. I just was thinking of it from a perspective that maybe at some point we could see if that rush hour traffic was picking up, because that could show a correlation potentially on the commuter side if there's ever an opportunity to do that. So, but thank you for your explanation. I totally understand. So thanks.
Yeah. Rush hour peak period travel is picking up. I would say the route that we see maybe lagging on the peak hour travel is actually 215, Interstate 215. Has lagged a little bit, well, has lagged behind I-15 and I-80 in the urbanized areas for peak hour travel.
Thank you.
Terry, I've got a question.
Yes, sir.
In fact, I've got two quick questions. Number one, have you seen a decline in fatalities? I used to watch that pretty carefully when I was on the commission. Has there been that 15 to 20% decline in fatalities? That's question number one. Number two, I've heard the statement that instead of getting 20 miles to the gallon, now I'm getting 2 weeks to the gallon. Are you seeing a decline in your tax revenue because people are just not driving as much?
I would say the first question, unfortunately, we're not seeing the fatalities go down. We're running pretty consistent with where we were last year.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. So overall crashes are down, but the severity is up.
Is that because people are going faster now with less traffic?
Yes. So far, the record for Highway Patrol in the last 90 days is 184 miles an hour. So I'm hoping
that
continues. But we had six fatalities last week on Utah's roadways, and the speeds are up, and some of the driving behavior has been less than ideal. On the revenue side, Terry, do you want me to jump in on that a little bit?
Sure, we have an item further in the agenda that Linda was going to try to address, but if you want to give your short version of it,
okay. Yeah, because Linda will have better details. But what I'll say is, you know, the money coming into the transportation fund, that's, you know, our gas tax, diesel, It lags quite a bit. In fact, just last week, we just got the numbers for March. And so, you know, as you know, the traffic slowdown, you know, probably the last 10 days in March were, you know, a big impact on that. April will be the most interesting month, and we won't see those numbers until about the first week of June. And I'll let Linda talk about the numbers when you get to that item.
Thank you.
Any other questions on that topic? Okay, well, we will move on to emissions impacts. So I have down Wasatch Front, and Andrew, I'm not sure who was going to handle this discussion.
Terry, Andrew stepped out, but Kip Billings, I believe, is prepared to do the presentation.
Okay. Great. Kip, go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my screen to share.
So have you used Google Meets for this before?
I have. There it is.
Okay, got it.
Sharing now.
I would like to point out the hat that Kip is wearing. Kip's a proud Catamount, and where I went to school as well. So it's good to see the University of Vermont showing off there, Kip.
You're welcome.
What is a Catamount?
I was at the dermatologist this morning, so I decided a hat was appropriate. All right, you're seeing my screen and hearing me all right?
Yes.
So we were curious with the this historic change in traffic, how this might be reflected in air quality. So we took on the task to do some analysis. We started with some earlier data from UDOT for March and April that was indicating to us that traffic in general was down in the 40% range in the Wasatch Front area. Trucks, however, were only down about 15%. That may be changing now, but those were the two parameters we started with: light duty traffic reducing 40% and the heavy duty traffic decreasing 15%. So taking that information and looking at our emissions by vehicle type, and we estimated what would happen if you had a 40% reduction in light duty traffic and a 15% reduction in the heavy duty traffic. There's four categories of emissions. The vehicles on the road are one of those. That's the bar you see in gray. The yellow is point sources, that's the large industry. The non-road sources, that's planes and trains and lawnmowers and so forth, construction equipment. And then the blue part of the bar is area sources, which is kind of a miscellaneous category. That's homes and small businesses, hairsprays, paints, and so on. So we didn't assume any changes in those other categories other than vehicles. Certainly there's been some changes in those others, but we didn't have that information. So that reduction in traffic represents about a 38% reduction in vehicle emissions, shown there in the center in red. But overall, that's about a 17% reduction. I should have qualified this. We're talking about here in this chart, the nitrogen oxide emissions. We looked at two emission, two types of emissions, the nitrogen oxides and the volatile organic compounds, because those are the ingredients to our particulate matter pollution and the ozone pollution that we get in the summer. So we just focused on those two. So overall, we were estimating a 17% reduction in emissions from the traffic reduction. When you look at the volatile organic compounds, it's very similar. The vehicle emissions of volatile organic compounds, we estimate about a 37% reduction would go along with that, the traffic reduction we had. When you look at all the categories involved, that's about an 11% reduction overall. So now the next question was, okay, if we have these reductions in emissions, what does that do to our air quality? And we found it's a little, this time of year is, turns out to be the really the cleanest time of year for air quality. We're beyond the wintertime inversions that lead to accumulation of particulate matter pollution. And we haven't entered yet the summertime where we have those really hot sunny days that lead to ozone formation. So March, April, May, in the spring tend to be some of the best months of the year for air quality. Likewise in the fall, September, October, November are also very clean because we don't have those two extremes of the inversions and the hot sunny days. So it was actually a little difficult to pick up a change in the observed pollution or air quality. The chart you're looking at right now is from the ozone monitor station in Bountiful. The ozone pollution in 2019 is shown in blue, and in 2020 shown in the orange color. And you can see that the standard is quite a bit higher at 70 parts per billion. So again, this is a clean time of year. It didn't show up real well that we have a reduction in pollution. Division of Air Quality has documented some improvements, but I think more will be learned as we go forward. This chart is showing the particulate matter pollution. This is from the Rose Park station. And you see the standard there at 35 micrograms per cubic meter. And both years, this time of the year, we're just well below that. In fact, Division of Air Quality mentioned that when you get down into the single digits of particulate matter pollution concentration, it's really testing the sensitivity of their equipment to measure when it's that low. So, and in fact, to the 2020 particulate matter in April was even a little bit higher than it was in 2019. And I think that's really the sensitivity of the equipment. And there's some other factors as well. I think there's a number of things we can learn from this historic event. The telecommuting has proven to be a very effective strategy. It's been around for decades, but maybe not embraced wholeheartedly. And I think we're discovering through this tipping point experience that this is something that can be really effective. It doesn't cost much to implement it. In some cases, people like to do it. And we know it reduces VMT. And as a consequence, mm-hmm. it's reducing vehicle emissions. Some other things to keep in mind, though, that vehicles are about a third of the emissions categories that lead to ozone and particulate matter pollution. So we're fixing one part of the puzzle here. And the air quality question is fairly complex. The emissions profile is more than just the vehicles on the road. It's a lot of other categories. And the air quality is very sensitive to the weather or even the season of the year, whether we have inversions or not, and whether we have that intense sunlight that generates ozone. There's more to be learned. UCARE is undertaking a survey of teleworking. that will be coming out next month, and we're helping to some extent with that. That will teach us more. Division of Air Quality will be monitoring air quality and how it's been affected during this coronavirus restrictions. So with that, I can respond to any questions, but that's what we learned about air quality and the traffic reductions.
Great, thank you, Kip. Any questions?
Terry, this is Jim. You know, it's really interesting to see all three of these presentations, and just my mind's just wandering, thinking how, you know, even in a, you know, a kind of a difficult time, hard time like this, these great data trends that we're monitoring will help us as we do planning on trends going forward. We see what's impacting some of these trends as we look to the future. I for one, I really appreciate all the time and effort that each of these three groups have put into these numbers, because they're really, I hope we will take advantage of, you know, studying and looking at this and not just look at it right now, but this is really some good.
Dan, it sounds like we lost you for a moment, Jim.
Am I still there? Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you now.
Yeah, no, I just hope we'll take advantage of the of all this great information, not just because it's here because of COVID and what we're going through, but it just really is some wonderful information. I thank everyone for pulling this together, and I hope we will, in our respective groups, look at this on how it can help us with decisions in the future and now going forward.
Terry, this is Kip again. One other thing I wanted to mention, we were looking at, you know, the telecommuting as being a big factor in the traffic reduction, but it's a lot more than that. Our agency likes to measure access to opportunities, but that presumes there's opportunities, and I think a lot of this traffic reduction is lost opportunities. The stores and restaurants and in some cases jobs aren't there for people to go to. So that's a big part of that traffic reduction. We hope that part comes back, but the experience has taught us a lot about telecommuting, and this meeting is another example of that.
Yes, we're all learning all kinds of things we didn't intend to learn, but yeah, that I agree with Commissioner Evans. My hope is that we're going to take some of the things we've learned from this and help to make it a positive as we come out of it. Okay, if there are no other comments there, we'll move on to have Linda Hall talk about funding and revenue challenges as we're seeing them.
Hello, everyone. With Carlos on the phone, you can correct me if I quote something wrong. But I'll just start off for March, as Carlos mentioned, that was our most recent revenue when we were looking at the taxable gallons because of that 2-month lag. So I'll just kind of quote where the taxable gallons are because that will give you some idea of what's happening with revenue. So these taxable gallons is looking at March 2020 compared to March of 2019. I'll just mention aviation fuel, no surprise to anyone, was down 26%. CNG was down 0.2%. Motor fuel, gasoline, was down 13%, but diesel was up 3.2%. So when you're looking at gasoline and diesel, it was overall a drop of 8.4% taxable gallons in that. But the interesting part is when you're looking at the revenue for FY20, which remember started in July, revenue was actually up 3.4%. Part of that reason is because fuel sales were tracking a little bit higher than what was originally estimated for FY20. And just also a reminder that the CPI fuel tax indexing kicked in on January 1. So fuel tax went up 1.1 cents a gallon, went up from 30 cents a gallon to 31.1 cents a gallon. And so that made a difference in terms of the revenue that was collected. So, but of course, we know that the revenue in March isn't taking into account the more dramatic reduction in travel that occurred in April, and which also went into May. We know that undoubtedly FY20 revenue numbers will be impacted by that total decrease in travel. So just, I just want to mention, to put the whole thing in perspective for you as you're thinking about this, what this means to local revenue with the BNC fund. So the BNC fund, the total distribution in FY19 was $179 million. For FY20, the original estimate was $186 million total that was going to go out to the BNC. So just to put it in perspective, when you start to hear some of these numbers about decreases in the revenue. So the best official estimates right now are those presented by the legislature at the Executive Appropriations Committee that met earlier this month. They presented a range of potential impacts to revenue, no specific amount, just a range. So if you look at FY20, which is going to end at the end of June, FY20, the legislature was presented with a number to saying that revenues would be down 25 to 68 million in the transportation fund for the remainder of FY20. And so the BNC fund gets about 30% of that. So your range would be about 7.5 to 20 million range reduction to the BNC fund distribution for FY20. And FY21, Executive Appropriations heard that revenue could be down in the transportation fund anywhere from $35 million to $100 million for FY21. That's obviously a lot more dramatic. But there is one thing, I think an important caveat when you're thinking about that, the transportation fund. When the department is looking at the revenue numbers, estimates that are coming out are based in part the revenue estimates that were adjusted in February. So for example, within the department, we had budgeted a total estimated amount of revenue coming to the transportation fund of $630 million. Our budget was $630 million. That revenue number was adjusted in February up to $650 million. So more revenue was coming in. We didn't adjust our internal budget. We still had it at $630 million. We didn't add a whole bunch of projects based on what that new February estimate was going to be. So I think that's an important thing to consider when you're thinking about your BNC budget and what's occurring to your budget, is realizing that when the legislature is talking about consensus revenue estimates, they're talking about the revenue estimates that would have been increased during the year. So in February, it went up to $650 million. So when you're looking at your BNC budget, did you make an adjustment to your budget estimates in February when that revenue estimates went up? Did you make those adjustments? Or do you look at it, you kind of flatlined it? Well, I got this much last year, I'm going to kind of flatline it for the following year. So just keeping in mind that when they're talking about how the revenue is going to drop, it's dropping a from a higher revenue estimate. The way I think of it is, I was climbing up a cliff, I got partway up the cliff, I'm gonna drop off the cliff because the revenue's dropped. If I didn't climb higher up the cliff, my drop isn't gonna be as far. So when we had a $630 million budget, we were partway up the cliff. We didn't climb up higher up the cliff and then have a higher drop. We kept it at that lower number. So that's something just to keep in mind. We know that revenue is going to drop, but just kind of keep it in mind when the legislature is talking about those ranges, because the range seems really dramatic and really dire. For the transportation, that was just the transportation fund. When we're looking at projects funded through the Transportation Investment Fund and the TTIF, the Transit Transportation Investment Fund, those projects are funded in large part with general fund revenues coming in, a little bit of fuel tax, a little bit of motor vehicle fees. We don't know yet exactly what's going to be happening with those general fund revenues coming into the TIF. The legislature, we had planned to issue bonds next February. When you're looking at TIF projects, they're funded in part by cash revenue coming in and partly by bond proceeds. So we had planned that bonds were going to be issued next February. The legislature, during the special session, removed one of the caps for issuing those bonds. And so the bonds are being issued earlier. We had planned on issuing them anyway, but now they're being issued earlier. It gives the legislature a little bit more flexibility in terms of how we would be able to manage the Transportation Investment Fund budget, remembering that less cash is probably going to be coming in, and is some of that going to be backfilled with some bond proceeds. But right now, we haven't slowed down any bid lettings. Projects are still going out. As Carlos mentioned, in June at the special session, we anticipate that we'll have the April revenue numbers. We anticipate that those will see a more dramatic drop because it's an entire month of travel being down. We won't have May numbers until July. So we know that this budget situation is going to continue to evolve. As Terry mentioned, we're starting to see travel on the roads starting to tick up. Over the summer, we'll see if it continues to tick up, and we'll just get a better and better budget picture as the year progresses. I'm sorry to say we're not going to have a clear budget picture for you in the next month or two. It's going to be something that's evolving over the coming months, and we'll see how it comes out at that point. In terms of BNC distributions, we anticipate that the BNC funds would be distributed under the normal timeframes. Distribution just went out on May 13th. We anticipate the next distribution would be mid to late August because there's that delay when the tax commission is closing out the fiscal year to find out how much revenue we actually have. So I anticipate we're going to be following the exact same schedule we always have with the BNC distribution. Carlos, is there anything I missed? Anything that you wanted to add? Any questions, anyone?
Terry, Linda, no, thank you for that. I guess I would, it's important for people to understand that, you know, the legislature makes an appropriation. They're taking their best guess at what they anticipate the revenues being. When we do our planning, our CFO, Becky Bradshaw, does quite a bit of analysis, and she looks and says, how much money do I really think will be there? We never plan for more than is appropriated, but we oftentimes don't plan for what's appropriated. We have the responsibility to spend. We can spend what comes in, but we can't spend more than comes in. And so when, you know, especially for the local governments, when you look at BNC, if you look at that appropriation and say, that's the fixed amount I'm going to get, that's actually not going to be the way it is. It's going to be actually what revenues are coming in. And those revenues are then distributed. So we manage based on cash flow, and we're watching this all throughout the year. So this is no different than any other year. Just a little more dramatic, the drop in travel and the drop in revenues. But we have the mechanisms in place to manage to whatever revenues come in. So I just add that, Linda, and see if anyone has questions.
Linda, seeing Andrew, question for you and perhaps for Carlos. First of all, it's encouraging to hear the statistics that you're providing on the drop-off in fuel sales actually being, at least so far, not as dramatic as what we had anticipated. Because early on, you know, the statistics, as has already been presented in this meeting, were a range in a decrease in travel, you know, 40%, et cetera. And then there was an extrapolation across from the travel decrease directly to the volume of sales of fuel declining. And then an assumption, my gosh, we're going to lose 40% of our gas tax revenue. So far, that hasn't been borne out for some of the reasons that have been discussed here. And Linda, as you noted, we haven't seen April yet. But there has been among the locals a real worry about their gas, and you're experiencing this at UDOT, obviously more percentage-wise, but the locals being concerned about that drop-off and impact it might have on their ability to continue basic maintenance and the impact to those communities that are using those funds for projects, the ability to continue those projects. So if the drop off is not as dramatic, that's good for everybody. I know that we've been having dialogue with the League of Cities and Towns and the Association of Counties, and everyone is watching this closely, and all also having dialogue at the state level and the federal level about the possibility of additional revenues being provided to help the state and locals to make up for some of these losses. And that, I guess, gets to my question. There has been public discussion by the legislature and the governor looking ahead to the next version of the Utah Leads Together 3.0 about the possibility of additional bonding being done, not just to keep the existing program, but potentially to do even more than that. There's some articles about this over the weekend in the newspaper. And I just wonder if you might comment on your perspective on this possibility of the state or the federal government providing additional resources for transportation for economic recovery. How do you think we should be thinking about that right now?
Well, I can take a stab at it, but since Carlos is here, I'm sure everybody would rather hear Carlos's perspective on that.
Linda, why don't you go ahead and take a stab?
Oh, okay.
No pressure.
Yeah. So I'm just going to put it, kind of frame it a little bit. Under the Great Recession, when the Great Recession happened, you might have been seeing some stories in the newspaper recently about how the legislature bonded to do freeway projects. Well, I'm telling you that when you were looking at those are projects that were already programmed. We didn't go out and pick up new projects that we were going to fund. This was the TIF program. We were moving ahead with the I-15 core project. It had been programmed. And so when the legislature was looking at the budget, they were looking at there's a large influx of general fund revenue, sales tax revenue that's going into the TIF. And that was helping to pay for I-15 core. At that time, we used to get 8.3% of state sales tax that was statutorily dedicated to then the old Centennial Highway Fund and then the TIF. So what the legislature wanted to do, they wanted to free up some of that general fund. So they decreased our 8.3% earmark down to 1.8%, as I remember, and they backfilled that with some additional bond proceeds. So they're able to take cash out of the TIF program, backfill it with bond proceeds. And when you're looking at how the TIF program was balanced, there was less cash coming in and more bond proceeds. Of course, you have to pay the bonds back. It's not like it's free money, but that's how the legislature was able to balance it. They weren't new projects. It just kept the program moving forward. So I anticipate that that's what the legislature will be thinking about this time around in terms of here's the TIF program. Here's the projects we had all planned to move forward. Do we want to keep that program moving forward? And so when you're talking about stimulus, I don't think of it as a whole new list of projects that came out of nowhere. It's just, here's the program we had planned out for the next several years. Do we keep it moving? Carlos, anything you would add to that?
No, I think that's a good perspective. I think, I break it down into a couple pieces right now. One, we have this hole that's being created in the transportation fund, the gas tax, the vehicle fee generated piece, the operation and maintenance, and, some of our less sexy construction projects, and the B&C program. That's the piece right now that has the attention of transportation agencies around the country. And so then ASHTO, the National Association, had requested a $50 billion, they're calling it a backstop, so not a stimulus, and wanting to bring that money back to the states as state money so that we could actually fill the hole and keep the lights on is what a lot of states, how they're putting that right now. I think this immediate need right now of trying to fill the hole and keep things going is going to be what the legislature is going to focus on. The House back in Washington just passed the HEROES Act. It has $15 billion that kind of does, what ASHTO was looking for. The state legislature, I think, is going to first look to figure out a way to balance the books before they start looking at stimulus. And they're going to probably take cash. I anticipate them taking cash out of the Transportation Investment Fund and replacing that with more bonding so that we can keep the projects moving forward. And to me, success in transportation right now is if we can keep treading water where we are today, because we're in a very good place in Utah, and that's going to be what I believe it's going to go. If, as a next step of solving this issue, a stimulus is appropriate, I think everybody knows that, you know, we in Utah have a large appetite, and we have the teams that can deliver on more projects. Right now, the focus is purely on keeping the program going, what we have right now.
Hey, Linda, it's Carlton. I know UDOT did a great job, ironically, allocating the TTIF program out, and then, of course, this all happened. Are those projects basically on hold until you see what's still standing?
No, Carlton. I've been given very clear direction from the governor's office and legislative leadership. They think the work we do in transportation is really important, so we're keeping things moving forward. It's our intent to be moving forward with the Transportation Commission. We presented recommendations to them in our April meeting for the TTIF, and thank you for saying great recommendations. Not every community would probably agree with you, but sometimes you have to make hard choices. We're going to proceed with asking for approval on the TTIF projects, as well as on the active TIF and active TTIF projects as well. We think it's important to show progress moving forward on those.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So, Carlton, again, if it hits the fan, our ability to manage the pace of those projects is how we'll manage the cash flow. So that's the way we've always done things. We watch revenues coming in on a monthly basis, and we monitor the cash flow expenditures for projects, you know, currently under construction, under design, and we make sure that we balance. So at the end of the day, having a positive balance, you're a banker, you know this. That's probably, other than saving lives, that's the most important thing we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And if there are no other questions on that, that might have created the best segue we could have had to what Ben's going to talk about, which are the TIF and TTIF recommendations that will be in front of the commission for their approval on Friday. So, Ben, do you want to take it away?
Yep. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I will share my screen here. If I can find the right tab. I was thinking the same thing, Terry. It was a perfect segue. So thank you, Carlos. And so I'm just going to the UDOT homepage here, and then I'm going to click on the Transportation Commission link. And as Carlos mentioned, the TIF and TTIF recommendations are the culmination of the prioritization process, the updated prioritization process that we've been working on for about a year now, and this is kind of the culmination of that. So on the Transportation Commission website, under project prioritization process, the April 2020 commission meeting materials have the TIF funding recommendations and the see if I can blow it up a little bit. So there was a couple of things that we discussed with the commission last month. We're going to have some additional discussion on some of this in this week. There's a couple givens. One was, you know, the uncertainty that we've all been talking about here, even in this meeting. And then the other one was that the TIF was currently programmed out through part of into 2025. So given those two things, that kind of shaped how these recommendations came out. And you'll see the top two projects are the TIF highway projects, and We did not recommend funding any construction projects out of that TIF prioritization list. These were two projects that were kind of a setup to clear the way for future construction projects in the environmental documents. So it was the Bangor Highway Corridor environmental, and that one actually encompassed multiple future Bangor Highway projects, interchanges, and so it represented multiple projects on that construction project prioritization list. And then the second one was the I-15 600 North to Farmington environmental, to set the stage for that potential I-15 project. And then the rest of the projects on the list that Carlos mentioned earlier also is that we did want to recommend some TIF active transportation projects, which is the new project type that's eligible in TIF. And, you know, shaping that recommendation, there was a couple considerations also, is that this was the first year that we've had this program and there was a short turnaround time. So we didn't recommend all of the projects that were nominated through that process, but we felt it was important to get started on that and get some projects recommended for funding on this one. So that's kind of the summary of the TIF funding recommendations. Are there any questions or anything we want to discuss as far as TIF before I jump over to the transit? If not, I will jump back and pull up the TTIF. So this is the UDOT recommendations for funding out of the Transit Transportation Investment Fund, TTIF. There was, on the left side here, it shows the project type because there are two eligible project types, the transit, which are the capital projects, and then the first mile, last mile, which are the active transportation projects that connect to a transit facility. And so this one, in looking at that, I believe we looked at potentially programming out into 2022 based on the projected revenue into TTIF, knowing that there's, like all the other projected revenues, there's some uncertainty now. And so that shaped the recommendation for this program. And so that it actually included 5 out of the 6 transit projects that were nominated through that process. And then there was also a couple key first mile, last mile projects that were included in the recommendations for the total that's listed there. So that is the current TTIF funding recommendations. Like Carlos mentioned, we will be discussing this some more this week at the staff update and the Friday, and then potentially asking for approval at the Friday commission meeting for these lists. Is there anything else, Terry, or do you want me to cover, or is there any questions that we can answer on these?
Does anyone have a question? As Ben said, TIF and TTIF, we've been through quite a long process trying to get the prioritization in place, and this is our first time using the prioritization. And I will say we've learned a lot of things about the process, and there's some, you know, potential changes we make to it in the next year, but I think we've got a good list of projects here that we're recommending. Okay, no other questions on that topic.
Hey, Terry, I'll just say really briefly, thanks again to the team at UDOT for all the work and effort that you guys have put in to update your processes and really build new processes. It's I know it's been a lot of work. Ben and the team have done a really terrific job on this and have involved all of the partners, the Metropolitan Planning Organizations and transit agencies, and we just appreciate the work that's gone into it. Thank you.
And I'll maybe just say one thing that's been, I think really should be rewarding for this group is this group comes together to talk about the unified plan. And I think that the process we developed shows respect for all the work that's done in the unified plan because it uses it as the basis for choosing that first round of projects. So I think that was an important outcome of it. And I think this group should be pleased that that work was so heavily relied upon. Okay, any other business we need to conduct? Any other comments, questions anyone has? I love the long pauses we need to give to wait for somebody to chime in, but they're awkward but necessary. Okay, with that, I guess we're on item number 7, and it's a save the date. And Becky Lewis has given us a couple of dates she's thrown out there for an August 7th meeting and a November 24th meeting. So depending on what our situation is in August and in November, we may or may not be doing a virtual meeting. We're hoping that at some point we can meet in person and have these meetings and maybe get back to the days of doing some type of physical tour while we're having our meetings. But other than that, any subjects anyone has right now that they'd like us to plan on covering for August or November so that we can put them on as placeholders?
I wonder on the August meeting if we would have any update on the federal reauthorization of the FAST Act and kind of where they are in their process. I would also say it was historic that you brought up the Unified Transportation Plan and not Andrew Gruber, which means he's converted others to his evangelical efforts.
Are you suggesting that he's influenced me?
Just a little bit.
Terry, this is Kent. I think for the August meeting, perhaps we could get an update on the revenue sources for both UDOT and UTA at that point in time.
Okay.
This has been a very informative meeting, by the way, so thank you very much.
Good. Thank you, everyone, for suggesting items for the agenda. So,
hey, Terry, this is Jory. I think UCARE is doing a survey coming up here in June. It might be cool to see the results of that on okay. You know, how COVID's affecting the workplace and transitioning back. Even an update from organizations. I know we're looking at that at WFRC and a plan of attack, but just staffing wise, we're all a little bit different in size and makeup. So it'd be maybe a good quick report.
Okay, great.
Terry, just kind of keying off of Jory there, but it might be good to have more background on, you know, the TravelWise program. And, you know, we've been working with all of our partners on this. This is travel demand management. It was really one of the key lessons learned coming out of the Olympic effort. You know, we took that out of the Olympics as well as our incident management program. And, you know, it's something we've all been actively funding and working on for years. I think the potential now with all of us learning the, you know, that telework is viable and we trust people to do it. We could maybe make this a bigger deal and really make a bigger dent in our congestion.
Right. Great. Okay, with that, anyone like to make a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Okay, thank you, Carlton.
Second.
Okay, thank you, Beth. Okay, everyone in favor, say aye or hang up your phone.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thanks.